Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. She's our good friend, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, just an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. She is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hello there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
I don't think you'll mind. I was mentioning earlier in the hour, Joan, that this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes.
And you and I've talked about this a little bit on the show before, so
I don't think you'll
mind me saying that I'm very proud and very grateful to say that you're a 5-year breast cancer survivor.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
It's been 5 years.
Yeah. Well, that's a very important thing, and for you to say to women, and I would like to know if you have any thoughts about that you'd like to share with the ladies out there.
Well, I know how it feels to be diagnosed with breast cancer and you feel like your life is over and it's ruined, but that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. You know, people, lots and lots and lots of women survive. And so you just have to keep up hope and keep doing all the things you need to do to keep going.
You know, it doesn't always work out this way, Joan. Sometimes it is fatal. But I will tell you, Joan, there are many, many women. I'm thinking I can just very quickly over the last 22 years since I first experienced breast cancer in my family. 22 years. There have been like 8 or 9 women that I know or are members of my family have had breast cancer, including you, and they're all still alive.
That's fantastic.
100% still alive. So that's a great testament to not only the medical, what we have in the medical world these days, the medical capability, but also the awareness that the people like, for somebody like you to come out and say, you know, I've had breast cancer and I got checked and they found it and I got treated and now I'm still alive.
Well, one of the great things about breast cancer now is that we're talking about it. And some of the reactions to my breast cancer were interesting. People would come up to me and whisper to me, ask me about it, and I would whisper back, I haven't committed a crime, you know. I understand if people want to keep it private and not talk about it, but I think those who are willing to talk about it, I think really help everybody, because that means that the important thing to know when you're diagnosed is that you're not alone. There's a whole big sorority out there ready to help you.
Well, you know, Joan, 25 years ago, nobody would have said women's breast, would have said
that's
breast
right.
on the air. Or,
that's right.
Or
well, they couldn't say pregnancy on the air.
Exactly. You couldn't even say PG. No, that's
yeah.
exactly right. So that's one area where not being so prudish has benefited women, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So good for you for getting that word out, Joan. And
thank you.
And as I said, we're very happy about the outcome, and I know you are too. And folks, we're going to do a show later in the month with some breast cancer survivors, including Joan. We're gonna work on that. That'll come up later in the month, Joan. Because you know, as Breast Cancer Awareness Month unfolds, there's a lot of information, a flurry of information at the beginning of the month, but not so much at the end of the month. And I think what we'll do is we'll do this toward the end of the month. That way we can keep reminding people about this, and hopefully we'll encourage some women to go get checked. And if they find out, or if they've got a lump, you know, a lot of women check themselves, and hopefully they do, and they find a lump. Don't you think that people, a lot of people, it would be a natural tendency for anybody to just get frightened and not want to go get that checked?
Well, or to just, now in my case, I found a lump and said, oh, this isn't anything. I'm too young to have breast cancer. And I was ignoring it until my husband pestered the life out of me to go
mm-hmm.
get checked.
Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Good for him, yeah.
Ray finally did something right, huh?
I tell him he saved my life.
You be sure to tell him I said that.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the first issue in this week's Kiplinger letter, and I'm going to read this, folks. This is, you know, Kiplinger is usually not prone to hyperbole, folks, but here's what they say. Iraq teeters on the edge of a breakup. Joan, is that a little hyperbole?
Well, we're saying they haven't broken up yet, but... I don't know. I mean, I think it's right on. You may not think so. I'd be curious to know what you think.
No, I think that you guys are, as always, you guys are ahead of the curve.
I think the second line is even more interesting.
The U.S. may not be able to stop it.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right. No, I agree with you. I think that I think teetering is probably a good word. I think that this may be. We are currently in a fortnight period that is probably the most significant in maybe in the history of the country. What do you think?
I think that may be true. Yeah.
And tell us why. Tell us why this is going on.
Well, we're building up to October 15th, which is when Iraq will vote on a new constitution.
The constitution they developed and actually delivered in August.
Right, and it's gotten very complicated because this, you know, you've got the Sunnis and the Shiites, and the Sunnis have been concerned that they've been kind of blocked out of what's been going on, and they are, I guess many are against the Constitution and are trying to get the Constitution voted down. Now, there's been some back and forth in the past week in which the Shiites tried to put some mechanism into this situation that would have made it impossible, almost impossible, to vote down the Constitution, but I think the UN is putting some heat on them to pull back on that, so that there is a real, true referendum.
Well, let's just to help folks who may not have been keeping up with this part very much, the Sunnis are the ones who were. Let me put it this way: Saddam Hussein is a Sunni. His political party were called the Baathists. They were the Sunnis. They are in the minority in terms of numbers, right, Joan?
Shiites are the vast majority in Iraq, but they were the ones who were, put down by the Sunnis.
Right, and so they were basically oppressed by Saddam. Primarily, the Sunnis had more free reign. The Shiites not quite a bit, not so much. The Kurds to the north are the other major of the triumvirate of the three factions, and they were basically just persecuted and actually murdered by Saddam Hussein's group, gassed, and all the stories of him gassing and using chemical warfare on his own people. That was typically the Kurds that he was doing that to. So we've got these three factions: the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shias. The Shias seem to be controlling what's going on because in a democratic environment, the majority typically rules, right, Joan?
Exactly, right.
And that's what the Sunnis are worried about. The problem is the Sunnis are the ones who are typically seen as part of the insurgents. And so we're going to talk about this a little bit more right after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're going to find out if you agree with Kiplinger that Iraq may be teetering on the edge of a breakup. Stay with us.
The show, three to get ready now. Go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue
twist. Mr. Carl Perkins, ladies and gentlemen. No, that's not Elvis. It's Carl Perkins. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I actually don't have a pair of blue suede shoes, but I do
have. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was before you were born, Joan.
I mean, I'm young enough that I thought Elvis Presley did that song.
Joan, it's a classic. It's a classic. Everybody
knows. You haven't answered my question.
So what's your question?
What year was did that guy do
that
song?
That would probably have been about 1956 or 7.
1956. So how many years ago? That's about, what, 50 years ago?
You're good with the math there, aren't you, Joan?
Oh, thank you. 49 years
ago. We can't get anything by you. What's your point, Joan?
We can't get anything more recent than 49 years
ago. We've got lots of more recent stuff,
show.
But classics are classics, Joan. Uh-huh. We got to remember these classical things. So,
is that how you refer to yourself? You're a classic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I am a classic, no question. Hey, Joan, I want to get back to Iraq, and the issue here is that the original language in whether the Constitution would be approved was based on if any three provinces, and what are there, like 16 or so provinces, 16 or 17 provinces, if in three of the provinces across the country two-thirds majority of the registered voters voted no, then the Constitution would have to be redone. Now, that was the issue, was it was of registered voters, which was almost an impossibility. Because meaning that if you were against it and you stayed home, if you're a registered voter and you were against it and you stayed home, you would basically be counted as a yes.
Right.
So now they, what you mentioned earlier, the UN put pressure on them. So now it's going to be two-thirds of the voters, the people who actually show up.
Yes.
Two-thirds majority in three of the provinces. Joan, that changes the dynamics of the likelihood that this Constitution will be passed.
Won't it? Sure does. I think it does, yeah.
And so,
what I'm not clear on is, what, let's say that this is voted down, what happens then? Do they go back and try again, or what happens?
Well, I think, Joan, what you guys are pointing out, and I think this is where the teetering word that you use is very apropos, and that is that we'll know on the 15th and the 16th and 17th and maybe the 18th of October, we'll know how much of a chance Iraq has in being democratized.
Right.
And the reason is because if this goes, because see, it doesn't matter which way it goes. If it's voted down or if it's approved, there still are going to be hard feelings. And, what we'll
That's
find
true.
Is, what do they resort to? Do they resort to, you know, back about 6 months ago, I heard some of the insurgents, some of the minorities were saying, you know, we don't like this and we're going to sue. Well, you know, I've never been so proud to hear somebody say they were going to sue somebody. You know, they didn't say, I'm going to shoot you. They said, I'm going to sue. And so look for that to happen, Joan, don't you think, on the 15th and 16th? The language that they use, that will tell you, I think, don't you?
I would think so, sure.
So very important. And Joan, I also just have to say, God bless our men and women in uniform over there who are making great strides to do so many great things. Joan, they're building schools over there. They're digging wells. They're keeping the peace. They're fighting, rooting out the insurgents. Our military men and women are a remarkable group of people.
And let's remember that so many of them are reservists.
That's right.
And that have gone back more than once and for far longer than anyone had anticipated, and it's been very rough on them. Many of them are small business owners.
That's exactly right. And 100% of them, Joan, are volunteers.
Right.
And we have talked many times on this show with volunteers, civilians typically, with volunteers, American volunteers in Iraq who are over there right now trying to make this happen. And I'll tell you, they're the agape love that those people are giving, the love for people, the work for people, the sacrifice that they're making for people that they don't even know is really the best of humanity, in my opinion. Whether you agree with the war or not, with what we're doing or not, you gotta admire that kind of a commitment by people, don't you?
Right. Whether or not you support the war, you still support the troops.
Yeah. Well, Joan, let's move on and talk about move over to the economy and talk about the spending plans that folks are worried about. The many of the firms you guys say are reining in their spending plans, and that spending may be down a little bit next year.
Well, you can't accuse this letter of being Pollyanna this week.
Yeah, you guys are not playing the glad game here, the Pollyanna glad game, are you this week?
Not this week.
So what's going on with why are firms not spending money?
Well, they've got big energy bills, and you're even seeing it in today's paper. You see FedEx raising rates and other folks raising rates, and it's going to be very difficult. We say growth in business spending will dip. Now, we're not saying business spending will drop 7%. We're saying it's growth. The growth in spending will dip to a 7% level. So that's still not bad. But
it's not bad, right.
We'd like it to be higher.
Another thing, Joan, is we go to a break that I'd like to point out. In anticipation for this, folks, and I'm not saying that the corporations anticipated the hurricanes, but Joan, profitability has I don't know when profitability has been higher for corporations over the last couple of years, and major corporations have got more cash than I've ever heard of them having before. So the strength of the overall company, most of the companies, if not small businesses, certainly the larger companies, I think has never been better. And so I think we're going to be able to weather this. We're going to talk about this and other issues some more with our good friend Joan Pride right after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administer.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. The short one is jbsba.com. That'll help you get there a little quicker if you don't like to type. If you're just trying out your typing skills, though, you might want to try smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to check out the blog while you're there. And all the interviews that we do, folks, are available for your pleasure and for your immediate use, to your little heart's content, in multiple places on our website. The schedule when we're off the air, after we're off the air, that day's interviews and the ones prior in that week are available on the schedule. Just click on the little microphone. We also have them up on the blog, which includes this week's and last week's interviews are up on the blog. Every day, within an hour or so of being off the air, they're all right there. Just the interview all by itself, each one of them without commercials. Don't forget to check that out when you get a chance. It's a pretty cool technology. And don't forget you can subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes by email, and you can subscribe to the blog, which comes by really simple syndication. So check that out when you get a chance. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about the economy. And, of course, you can't talk about the economy without talking about petroleum, can you?
Boy, not these days, not at all.
And but isn't crude prices coming down a little bit?
A little bit, but from what I've been reading in today's paper, gas prices are easing a bit. But what's going up like crazy is jet fuel and diesel.
Yeah, it's going
and
up.
Home heating
And natural gas.
Natural gas, yeah.
What is 50% is what I keep hearing.
Ugh. Wow.
50% natural gas. And, you know, for a long time, natural gas was the lowest cost per BTU. And that's how you gauge it, isn't it, Joan, in terms of the value of an energy product is what does it cost you per BTU? And natural gas was a great deal for a long time, wasn't it? But not so much now.
Not anymore, no.
And, you know, I have natural gas at home. And
well, so many people do. You know, when I was a kid, the big thing was electric.
Right.
And, we had an oil burner when I was a kid. But then So many of the new homes over the last, I guess, 20 years have been built with natural gas just because natural gas was such a more economical alternative.
Well, and, of course, the prices were already... The prices were already getting high, but the hurricanes didn't help any, did they?
Oh, no question about it, because you have these rigs in the Gulf that are still not running at capacity.
Yeah, and when you talk about 50% natural gas, the thing that concerns me, Joan, over the winter is you got a lot of folks who can't absorb that kind of higher gas prices, higher natural gas prices.
That's right.
The inflation impact that it has upon... upon products that's after all this time that we've had these higher prices, it's getting into the marketplace, and so that we have got some inflation, and of course that's why the Fed raised rates, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm concerned it's going to be a tough winter.
I think you're right for many people,
for a lot of folks. And are you guys seeing that in terms of the consumers?
Oh, we think so. And I think, in fact, I just read in the paper, I think this morning, that this is also going to put a lot of pressure on programs around the country, I think federal and state programs that help lower-income folks with their heating bills.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this has got to put pressure on wages, Joan, because, more and more people who commute to work this is the higher energy prices have got to be impacting their discretionary income, their ability to have money to left over to do whatever they want to do, but once we get through the winter with the higher heating prices, the higher natural gas, the higher home heating oil prices, and then the gasoline prices and all that together, it's going to be now is the winter of our discontent or something like the one at Shakespeare.
This winter will be, I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. So, folks, just, Joan, I don't want to sound like, doom and gloom, but I do think that we have to be realistic about these things, don't you?
Absolutely.
And so, folks, I would say, just be prudent in your budgeting for the winter. Be prudent in your if you're a business that's relies on Christmas spending. I'm not saying don't be hopeful and you may have a great season, but I would say in terms of your supplies, in terms of your inventory, I would do my best to be as just in time as possible rather than just in case. It's 20 till. We're going to be right back with our good friend Joan Pride. We're going to talk about a little bit about the Federal Reserve Board. We'll come back after these messages. It's 20 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, your website is kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. And folks, I encourage you to check out that website. Joan, they can subscribe to your publications there, can't they?
They sure can.
Now, what would be some of those publications?
Well, let's see. We've got a whole bunch of letters. I work for the Kiplinger Tax Letter. Today we're talking about the flagship, the Kiplinger Letter, and we also have the Agriculture Letter and the California Letter.
And the flagship letter, the one that's just celebrated its 82nd anniversary, that comes out every week on Friday, right, Joan?
That's right. And then the other letters come out every other week.
They're biweekly. And now if you subscribe by email, you'll have them on Friday. If you subscribe by regular mail, you'll have them on Monday.
Right.
And then there's a magazine, isn't there, Joan?
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Right. And that's on newsstands as well. And you can subscribe at the website. And I encourage you to do that, folks, because they're outstanding.
You prefer to subscribe. You don't want to wait and buy it on the newsstand, because this way you're assured of getting it every month. You know, there's usually a stampede.
That's right.
The newsstand every month.
That people are lined up around the corner.
Right.
No question
so you
about
don't
it.
Want to miss your chance to get your own copy.
give us the phone number, too, John.
Yes. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
One of the things that you guys point out in the Kiplinger letter this week, Joan, is that are some ways to hold costs down, especially with freight. You know, this is something, Joan, that's an insidious little expense, not a little expense, it gets to be a big expense for a lot of companies, is freight. And more companies, more and more freight companies are adding 20 and 30%, 30-cent surcharges, aren't they? You guys report that this week.
They will, and we say that's going to keep up for most of the 2006.
Absolutely. And so one of the things you guys have recommended that they consider consolidating freight. Now, tell us what that means.
Right. Well, what you're trying to do here is get bulk rates. So you can use, I guess, software and technology to help you merge your inbound and outbound goods. And we say you could have a savings there of up to 10%, which is not bad.
Well, absolutely. And what this means, I think, Joan, is that you have to just go plan a little bit farther in advance.
Right.
So because if you can merge and you can consolidate with other freight, you can save money by not having yours come, you know, sort of all by itself. But also but when you do that, you might have to wait a week or so on that.
Right. So that's why where the advanced planning comes in, because you don't want to leave yourself short.
And that's what the software helps with. And so
right.
I'm going to mention a couple of the names that you guys have here. IMI, Manugistics, and Savvy Technology, SAVI Technology, are some of the ones that you guys mentioned. Another thing, Joan, is I'd like to encourage people to consider outsourcing their freight and their logistics to companies who do that as a specialty, who do that as a profession, And they probably you might actually be able to save. I'm not saying you're going to be able to put any more money on the bottom line, but Joan, I would say that if you do business with some of these folks who really know how to make sure you get the most out of your shipping and freight dollars, they might be able to at least cut into these increases you guys are projecting.
Well, because as important as all this is that you're talking about, you still have the problem that we've talked about before is if I'm a small business person, I'm kind of busy running my business.
Exactly.
And as important as it is to be consolidating, merging my inbound and outbound, I may not have time to do that. So outsourcing sounds like a good idea.
Outsourcing is the best thing that ever happened to small business, not only from a standpoint of from an opportunity standpoint where you are the outsourcer as a small business owner, but also in terms of taking tasks and letting somebody else do that. And I have a real simple rule, Joan, that I recommend folks say to themselves, to ask themselves this question, whether they should outsource something. And here it is. It's ask yourself this question. Must this task be done in-house? And if the answer is no, that it doesn't have to be done in-house, then I say do it. If it's not one of your core competencies, if it's not the main reason why customers do business with you, then you should look to somebody who really knows what they're doing in that area, who have the resources and that you can be part of. And freight is a good example, Joan. Consolidating, there are lots and lots of freight consolidators out there. There are lots and lots of people who can help you with this and a lot of other things like payroll. That's
right.
Another one. The human resources area is another one. So check those out, folks. Joan, let's move over and talk about the Federal Reserve. We got a big decision coming up, don't we?
Well, we sure do, because Mr. Greenspan is retiring, and he would like for his retirement to start after the Fed meeting on January 31st. So the president has to kind of get going on this one and come up with a replacement fairly soon.
This may be Sandra Day O'Connor in the Fed all over again, Joan. She wanted to retire. She's not retired
yet.
She sat on the bench yesterday, didn't she?
She did, and that presents complications of its own.
Yeah. So, but now Mr. Bernanke, who used to be part of the Fed, now is a financial advisor to the White House. A lot of people say that he's the heir apparent, but Joan, yesterday, I think it was, the Wall Street Journal was saying, don't be so quick to think that it's going to be somebody from inside the Fed that Mr. Bush, you know, one thing we know about Mr. Bush, he's full of surprises, isn't he?
Now, what makes you say that? Has he done anything lately to make you think that way?
Well, you know, I think he's took people by surprise with his new associate justice pick.
I think he did.
Harriet Myers.
Yes,
is it Myers or Meyer? Is it with an S or without the S?
I think it's with an S.
Myers. Harriet Myers. I always forget. But, I think he wants to keep keep people guessing, I guess, but that's a really big decision. These are big decisions, aren't they, Joan? He's got a chief justice decision he's just made. He's got made an associate justice decision, and he's got a Fed decision. These are big decisions for a president.
Right, Fed chairman, yeah.
What'd I say? I meant Fed chairman.
No, you were right. Yeah.
Yeah, and so those are huge decisions, and then he had a couple of hurricanes right in the middle of all that. What else can happen, Joan?
Right.
Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. More to come. We're going to talk a little bit about healthcare, some important stuff for small business I think you'll find interesting right after these messages. It's 10 Till. Stay with us. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. By the way, folks, I will be on the road again next week. I'm going to be in Woodlands, Texas, just north of Houston. I'm going to be at the Administaff Small Business Classic. It's one of the Champions Tour tournaments, as I did last year. I'll be there this year again, broadcasting 4 days, Tuesday through Friday of next week. I'll be out there looking forward to seeing all those folks out there again. Joan, let's talk about Joan Pride is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. And Joan, let's talk about telemedicine. What's that all about?
Well, telemedicine is kind of interesting. This is long-distance healthcare, which, of course, is you're able to do this now because of modern technology, and I guess it's kind of exciting, I think, to a lot of people just because you can get medical advice into areas that may be isolated or rural or far away.
Well, I'm excited about it for a lot of reasons, but let's focus on the topic that you guys mentioned here, and that is that if I'm an employer and I've got employees and we're kind of out in a rural area, and I have employees who need to go to the doctor,
right,
for them to drive to the nearest medical area and wait on the doctor to see them and then drive back, basically they've shot the day.
That's right.
And so they've lost a day's work. Either I pay for that or they pay for it. But certainly we've lost a day's productivity when maybe all that we had to do, and when the whole visit maybe took 4 minutes.
Right.
I mean, how many times, Joan, do you go sit in the doctor's office for 2 hours and the doctor sees you for 4 minutes?
Boy, that's certainly true.
Happens all the time.
Sure.
And so telemedicine, and plus the fact that when he or she talks to you, they don't necessarily need to see anything. They're just in front of you. They could be in front of you by teleconferencing, couldn't they?
Right.
So this is a good thing, Joan. But I was thinking about something else, though, Joan, and that is there are a lot of people who are infirmed and who are immobile, who can't get to a doctor that maybe they need to see. And there are a lot of people in nursing homes that need to see a specialist, and they have to load those people up and take them to the hospital to see the specialists. And that's a pretty tough thing for those folks to have to go through. There's a lot of stress involved. Sometimes
Oh, sure.
It sets them back so much they don't make it.
Right.
Because of the trip, not because of why they went.
That's right.
And I can see how this would be telemedicine would be a good use of that capability.
It sure makes a lot of sense.
So I'd like to see more telemedicine, folks. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have that. Joan, let's move over and talk about Katrina. Federal aid for Katrina is sure to be less than first estimated from your mouth to God's ears, Joan. I hope that's the case.
Well, as we say, Congress doesn't want to inflate expectations about what people should expect. And, you know, we've got the deficit problem. We don't want to be running that up too high.
Well, and Joan, the first early reports I saw were $200 billion that the federal government was going to pump into that area.
Right, and now we're saying it's maybe half that.
Yeah, and it needs to be half that because not to be insensitive, folks. I want that part of the world to recover, but I think it needs to be with a blend, a prudent blend of private and public sector money.
Right.
Because, as you say, Joan, we've got our own deficit going on. We need to be able to do other things.
Oh, sure.
And I just think the government needs to take the secondary seat. They need to fill in where they need to fill in and let the private sector handle the rest of it.
That's right.
So hopefully. Joan, let's move on down and talk about something that's being talked about recently. You guys pointed out this week, and that's the military's involvement and intermingling with civilian authority in a case like a hurricane. And now we're talking about maybe quarantining for this avian flu that people are talking about. Tell us why that's probably not going to work.
Well, as we say, it's a touchy subject. You know, this is a country that's always been governed by civilian leaders, not
right.
The military. And so in the United States, it's just been a tradition of keeping the military out of those leadership posts.
It was one of the fundamental elements of the Constitution, wasn't it?
Exactly. So even though there's talk about, allowing the military to have civilian law enforcement authority in situations such as Katrina or Rita or an avian flu outbreak, we don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't even know why people are talking about it, John.
I know, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me for anybody to be talking about this. This is so contrary to who we are,
right.
as Americans. I can't even imagine it'd be there's got to be other ways to solve this. And I think you guys are right. I think it will be solved another way. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you,
always.
Jim, very much.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, including... And my heroes are also every member of our military standing a post around this world on our behalf. God bless you. God be with you. This is Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blessingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.